Okay, this is the seventh talk on the paramis. And just to recap, the first talk was on the paramis as a whole, and you could call them the higher level personality, how we are as people as a result of spiritual practice, how the freedom works inside us and changes the territory of our personality. And the first talk was covering all of them together. The second was on the first parami, Dana. Then there were two talks on the second parami, Sila, or ethics and right action. And then there was a talk on renunciation, Nekama, Vitur. And the next one was on Panya, or wisdom. And now we come to the fifth parami. Virya means energy. And I'd like to give the title to the talk, which is a quote from the Buddha, which is very much about the right energy for spiritual practice. The title is Crossing the Flood, by not striving, but by not stopping. And it comes from a quote in one of the suttas where an amazing goddess, that was lighting up the whole orchard where the monks were staying, approached the Buddha and said, how did you manage to cross the flood of samsara? By not stopping, friend, and by not striving or straining, I crossed the flood. But how is it, dear sir, that by not halting and by not straining, you crossed the flood? When I stopped, friend, then I sank. But when I struggled, then I got swept away. So in this way, friend, that by not stopping and by not struggling, I crossed the flood. And the comment was by the goddess said, ah, now I see someone who is fully quenched. Nibbana means quenching, means putting out the fire. Someone who's put out the fire completely, by not stopping and not struggling, has crossed over attachment to the world. So that's the kind of quality of energy that I want to explore together with you. So clearly, we need effort and energy. Otherwise, simply nothing happens. And the word virya, which is the word for energy, it's power. It's similar to power. It's a life force. It's come into the English language as a virility, or a vital, or virile, meaning almost a male power. But it means a force of life. And energy, and some effort, and it means we have to recruit, lagayes, to recruit our energy for this project called liberation. It doesn't happen without energy. And mostly, the issue is, for us, is often keeping the energy going. It has in it, in virya, a quality of sustaining the energy, maintaining the energy, so that the energy is not all a big burst of enthusiasm and then collapse. And we know that one. I think all of us know that one. Big burst of enthusiasm and energy for this retreat or this thing, or getting up in the morning and feeling great, and then by the time the afternoon comes, we're already all collapsed, and after 100 emails, or crying children, or a complaining partner of ours, bitching, all the energy disappears. So our problem is sustaining the energy and keeping it aliveness, and then directing the aliveness to our awareness, to our insight. So there is another one of the paramis called adhidhana, which you can translate as determination or resolve or nechishut. It's not quite the same as energy. It's, and we'll come to that later. And so they're rather different. They overlap, because it's, energy comes from motivation. If we have motivation, adhidhana, good motivation, we will get energy. Someone after the Dalai Lama was talking, I don't know if you hear it, heard him here when he came to visit Israel, but there were, he did one session in the university, I was there, and he didn't stop talking for like 6 hours or 7 hours. I mean, just non-stop flow. And at another time, someone asked him, where do you get that energy from? And he said, it comes from the highest motivation. The highest motivation, basically compassion. So clearly they're connected. Energy comes from motivation, but they're also different. So we might experience that in a beginning, or in the simple sense, the energy is not very reliable. It arises and it disappears. It's a bit crude, guess. If we succeed, we have a good experience, a spiritual experience, it brings energy. And then if we feel we're just sort of schlepping along, nothing really happening, nothing we can define as success, and our energy goes, because we don't feel the hope and the enthusiasm for practice, because it doesn't seem to be giving us that fire. So in that sense, at the beginning, the energy is rather dependent on other things, on conditions.
Like happiness.
Like happiness. Or encouragement, or the guru smiles at us. And then we have plenty of energy. And the guru, I'm not talking about this context, but in other contexts, especially Indian contexts, the guru is nice to you, everyone has their energy. The guru puts you down and your energy collapses. So it's rather dependent, this energy in the beginning stages, and unreliable. And there is a lot of stories and kind of romantic stories in the tradition about heroic energy. The monks that decided that they would climb up a ladder to a rock high up, and then they threw the ladder down and said, we have to, enlightenment or death. Can't get down except by flying. You have to be enlightened or dead. And there's lots of stories. Milarepa, you may know the story of Milarepa. It's a very beautiful story, and a great Tibetan sage, how he had heroic energy. So 30 years of working with stones and building and so on, and in non-stop in order to receive teachings. So we will find ourselves at the kind of beginning of the journey in quite a state of kind of zigzag with our energy, flip-flop. And we'll find good energy in a certain situation, we practice well, and then negative, disappointment, not working for us too well, the energy goes down, we don't know why, we go to a retreat and we feel no energy left, and we're tired all the time, and we don't know why. And so the energy kind of goes up and down, and it's not really in our control. And we often feel we can't practice because we don't have energy for it. And it, a lot of people would say that, and all of us perhaps would say, oh, any nirgal, I can't be bothered with this. Any nirgal is there, just let me do something comfortable, have a good, don't know what, meal and turn on the TV and forget the world, and I don't have energy for any of this stuff called the Dharma, and, you know, inner work. Too much for me, too tiring, any nerves. So we all have that voice in us. Not a surprise, we all have it. It's the voice of the self, it's the voice of conditioning. And sometimes it's very much lifestyle. Here is where energy is where lifestyle does affect us. I feel if I forget and have sweet things in the morning or evening, right? Get tempted to have something sweet, you know, with a little bit too much sweet, and my energy can go crashing down after an hour or so, and I forget that it's just sugar. And so, you know, biology affects energy, how we eat, if we take exercise, and how we live, and if we live without stress, stress will take energy away. So there's another side to that, which is not, this is not the time to talk about that. I have had quite a lot of experience with, for example, with people who were quite sick, and they come and say, you know, I really can't meditate. I'm taking morphine for cancer pain, or in other conditions of life where of sickness and no real life energy. So how does one practice with no energy? And I think, of course, it's possible to practice. The practice doesn't depend on the experience of energy or no energy. The practice is practice with any condition that we're in. Everything is raw material for practice. So Chomagelim. Everything is Chomagelim for practice. So someone who is taking morphine and feeling dreamy, tired and spaced out, that's the experience to practice with. That's all. Or if you're really tired, you know that from retreats, sometimes you need to just feel the tiredness, the heaviness, the quality of it, not to judge it, but to explore what is this feeling of the hindrance of tiredness, the third hindrance. But the flip-flop, gradually as we keep practicing, this zigzag of good energy, tired energy, more energy, less energy, these waves begin to settle down and we find ourselves more in the middle way. Derech HaEmsa. And actually the middle way, one of the best stories of the middle way is very much about virya, about energy. And the story was when the Buddha was sitting on the bank of the river in very advanced state of ascetism, sagfanut, and heroic energy, heroic practice. And so the story goes. He saw a boat passing on the river with a musician and a student. And the musician said to the student, if you tighten the strings too tight, they don't make music. If you loosen them too loose, they don't make music. The sitar will make music if the strings are at the right tension. And for the Buddha, this was a major breakthrough. And after that, he softened and he allowed, you might call it the feminine. And a woman from the village came, or a young woman, and brought him kheer, sweet rice. And then all his friends left him because they said, well, you know, you just gave up. But he actually found that the middle way is more important. And so, yeah. And so the middle way is very much about energy. Energy is a very good example of the middle way, where it's less and less dependent on conditions. So conditions can change, energy can go up and down, but because we're not really worried about it too much, we practice with low energy, we practice with high energy. We practice with ecstatic, wild energy, and we practice with sloth and torpor, as they call it in the third hindrance, weariness, laziness, etc. That's same raw material. And there's something about, it's also like everything, energy in us tells our story. It has story behind it. It has meaning. And, for example, sometimes on retreat people say, I have no energy, I have no energy. So if it's the first day, I say, yeah, probably you've been just killing yourself the last week. You need to recover. Just go rest. If it's the second day, you say, well, yeah, maybe it's still leftovers, but watch it. If it's already the third day, you know, wait a minute. You already had lots of sleep and at least a bunch of coffees already, and you're still like that, then it's something else. It's energy is a voice from the subconscious. It's a voice from the conditioning world. It's a voice that's telling us energetically how we are. So it's a voice to be seen and appreciated. How many of you recognize this? When you say, "Aimi energia," it's actually a form of escape. It's actually a form of switching off. It means, "Aimi energia bishvilze." I want to switch off. I can't face it. I can't deal with this. And sometimes it's totally unconscious or subconscious. It's not even the thought that I can't deal with this. It's the unconscious mind saying it's all too much. And then switching off happens on the energetic level. The energetic level is a level of mind-body. It's not just mind, it's not just body. So it has messages, the energy. It's meaning. It has meanings for us. And that's why it's a hindrance. One of the hindrances. Hindrances are qualities that are qualities of samsara, really, that working through the unconscious or subconscious mind. Agitation, isheket, or tiredness, switching off, or desire, or aversion. No, you know them. But they are kind of mind-body qualities to do with conditioning. And they hold us. And we in our practice need to open them and look and see what they're saying. And so hindrance is always an invitation to open something that's coming up for us on the mind-body boundary, on the gvul, or on the shetach of between mind, the body, in the area between the two. That's conditioning happening, and it's coming as an energetic quality, not as story, not as narrative, but as a quality. I really have to, I need desire, I really need this, I really must do this, I have to change my cushion, I have to eat now, I have to do this, or tiredness, I just can't face it, I need to rest, I must switch off. These are energetic qualities and they need to be explored. And as we explore them, they get less. They get less powerful. The isheket, the agitation or the tiredness and the weariness or the laziness, they get less powerful because we meet them as they are. And we don't give them power on us. We open them. And very often, they will tell us about patterns that we have that are draining the energy. Low energy, when we look at it, will often tell us about our fears, for example. Just what I said before, I can't face this, switching off can be our fear. I can't face this challenge I have in life. I just can't bear, I don't, leave me alone. Can't deal with this. It's a sense of withdrawal. But we have to see that. Or denial. Hakhasha. Who can steal our energy. Or buried pain. We worked quite a lot on this in the couple of retreats we did on with Germans and Israelis exploring the Holocaust as a deep narrative that steals, that takes away from us life energy. We feel and the Germans and Israelis both felt in a different way, in some cultural way, was suppressing, putting down the joy of life and the energy of life by having this heavy thing. Guilt is another place we can often look and see that's taking our energy away. I never forget that one time in one of the sessions we did bringing Israelis and Palestinians together in Nablus, in Shechem, the Israelis were, one or two of the Israelis were saying how guilty they felt at that time for the suffering of the Palestinians that they had to endure. And one Palestinian young guy said, your guilt doesn't help because it steals your energy. What we want from Israelis is Israelis with energy to make change, not Israelis that are guilty and feel guilty and stay at home and feel bad. We want Israelis that have the courage and the energy to go out and make change and make our life easier. And the guilt doesn't help to do that. And it was quite an insightful comment from a Palestinian young guy. So these are things that we can see that drain our energy, patterns. Bikoret is another one, criticism. So a classic one, Bikoretiyut. Shiputiyut on ourselves or on others. We don't even know it's happening, but it drains energy away, takes energy, steals the energy from us. So in a number of suttas, the Buddha said, we need four places, four kinds of energy. And the first is the energy to let go of, to abandon things that are not helpful to us. Needs energy to let go of attachment, needs a certain energy to let go of addictions, to let go of things that hurt us or harm others, to let go of confusions. So the akusala, the non-healthy, wholesome aspects of our life, energy is needed. We have to do something. We have to go there and say, look, that enough is enough. And that needs an energy. And the second is energy for keeping going, for maintaining things that maintaining things that are helpful to us. To keep practicing. To keep going sometimes needs an energy. To keep being mindful, it needs energy. So maintaining is the second one. The third is initiating something that isn't there before. Starting something up, finding something new. Initiating is the liazam.
Lizom,
to bring up something. For example, an insight, a truth that we want to discover or that we're beginning to discover, needs energy. Say, well, this is interesting, I'm going to look at this. This, I haven't seen this before. Something new about my life. I want to initiate, make a change, see something new. And developing is the fourth one. Developing things in us that we feel are healthy and developing our practice and so on. But as we practice, everything gets more subtle, more nuanced. And one of the images that I like, because I have chickens, and it is a text, a sutta, where the Buddha talked about chickens. And he's talked about how a kind of a really quiet energy is an energy of a chicken sitting on eggs. And in the text, the Buddha said, never mind how much the chicken is saying, oh, I want my chicks to come out now. I can't wait for 21 days. I need my chicks now to come out. I want to hear their little beaks pecking on the shell. And I want to hear the squeak, little noise of them now. I can't wait. But it doesn't happen. It will only happen when it's right to happen. So you can't hurry that process. So that's an energy of maintaining, of staying. And yet it's a very quiet energy. The chicken sitting on eggs is extremely quiet. It's kind of very, very steady. And so that's an energy. Still needs to stay there for 21 days. That's an energy which is more subtle. It's not the up and down. Oh, great energy. Oh, no, no energy today. It's very steady energy. And that comes from practice. Also a kind of middle way. Or like barbur, a swan. If you see a swan, gliding on the water. And I love to watch them, but under the water. What's happening under the water? Quite a lot of energy is being used. The swan is gliding, but under the water there's... Things get more subtle. The energy gets more delicate. The hindrances, as we keep practicing, the hindrances get much less powerful. Hindrances, machsomim. So the desire gets less overwhelming. The tiredness gets less total. The isheket gets less agitating, less powerful. All the hindrances get more delicate. They're still there. They're there more or less until awakening. But they're much more delicate. They're not such a problem. They're not so strong. And I think all of us experience this as we practice more and more. The things get more matun, is that the word? Yeah. Quiet, delicate. They're still there, but not so powerful. There's less resistance. There's less friction, chikuch. Another beautiful image is how a small flower, a small plant, can break concrete. If you look, it's sometimes amazing, you see a small plant that's kind of pushing stones or concrete coming through the crack and making it bigger. Little by little, slowly, slowly. And that's this energy. And slowly, slowly, the energy is developed in ways we don't control. And I mean, you were saying happiness. Happiness and joy, for example, brings energy. And we don't know how or why it may be, but the energy seems balanced. We not feel collapsed, we not feel agitated. The day has its energy. We have, if you look at most really, I would say, long-term practitioners, whether they're monks or in the community or Dharma teachers, generally the energy is pretty balanced. They keep going. And a lot of that is because they're no longer busy with the struggle or the friction or the resistance, which is coming from conditioning. The hatnaya. The conditioning is less, so the energy flows free. And so you find, you know, certainly if you go to the East, you find that these teachers, the heads of monasteries that will just talk 6 hours like the Dalai Lama. And I certainly experienced that. You know, I get up every morning at 5, and I'm still here today. I mean, here I am. After feeding my chickens and looking after things in Khalil and turning on the vegetable garden, and I'm here, traveling. The train was... Sahar and I were on the train, and the train broke down. Okay, so the train broke down, we got out, we're hanging out, and going back, and, you know, I've been with grandchildren today already, and here I am. So the energy flows, and I feel that, the energy flows. With less friction, I don't struggle against energy or to find energy. It's just happened by itself. It's not that I'm busy trying to grab, you know, find energy. It just somehow, the practice does it itself. And I think that the inner fire comes from a sort of balance of joyful energy. Joyful energy. All the paramis help it. Because, as you know, all the paramis help each other. So the energy of sila, right action in life, it's obvious that it's going to give you more energy. Because less guilt, less regret, harata, less struggle, less judgment, less fear, or dana, will give energy. The dana of giving and receiving will bring energy. It's a really joyful thing to give to somebody. If someone, you can be sitting around, but someone says, please help me, I really need help. Whoa, up you get. Because you really want to give, and that brings energy. Or equanimity. The balance will release energy. So, energy is also coming from all the other paramis. Non-resistance, not resisting, which is metta. Love. Huge energy comes from love. Love of Dharma. Love of truth. Brings energy. And as I was saying before, there is also the most subtle level of all the paramis. Harama achi adin, achi gavoa, shall I get it? The most high, which is the bodhisattva energy, the parami as on the highest level. And here it's the energy of the bodhisattva. And the bodhisattva is someone that will not stop until all beings and every ant and every insect and every human being and every animal and every fish in the sea are brought to total enlightenment. And so you can't imagine with that mission that the bodhisattva has set himself or herself. The bodhisattva would say, I'm tired, I don't feel like bringing anyone to an awakening. It's that's too much for me, I don't feel like lobali. Yes, nimasli. And I mean, you can just feel that the wisdom energy and compassion energy is kind of endless.
It's kind of what?
Endless. Ensof. It just keeps flowing. It's so much a flow. The energy of compassion, of love, of wisdom is a flow. It's bigger than us. It's really the rhythm and the energy of the universe. It in a way doesn't belong to us anymore. I was trying to give a little hint of that in the meditation we did. The energy of life is not ours to use up. We may feel we use it up, but actually it runs through us. And that's the kind of dance. The energy of the, I don't know how to put it really, Dakinis. Mentioned Dakinis, I think, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These the goddess energy. The little goddesses that make the world alive, that make life, that make things happen. The dance of the universe is the energy of the universe. It's the female energy, the dakinis, the dancing goddesses, the gopis, the play. It doesn't have in it any measuring. It doesn't have in it depending on any goal. You can't imagine that the bodhisattva is saying, I'll only keep going if I have proof that I've enlightened another 10 people or another 10 fish. You know, it doesn't have any measuring in it. I read somewhere that it's like the tiger who doesn't has the same energy whether he's trying to catch a rabbit or catch an elephant. It makes no difference. So I think going, I like to go back to that sutta of not struggling and not stopping, because that is that energy of flow of the dance